I couldn't give a fuck if Spurs only had two shots, kind of. We only had one, you know, before those goals went in. We didn't have the ball. Spurs had 70% possession at Villa Park. Our only chance was Dean missing the fucking ball off his head. You know.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa podcast. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left while you were sleeping.
That's all it took. And I chalked the line. Ah, it's just a waste of a season, isn't it? Just such a shame, really. Just like so disappointing. Come this far, did so well, really enjoyable season, but it's over. Let's be honest, it's over. Like, that's more than a six-pointer there today. That's an eight-goal swing as well. That's a psychological blow. That's another blow of players going missing. We'll talk about that a bit more later. I know we both still have to play Liverpool, City, Arsenal, but you have to say it's hard to see us outscoring them now in terms of points over the last 10 games. I mean, like, this is the thing, right? Ollie Walker just talking afterwards, and like, his interview's fine, right? The tone of it mostly is, oh, it's a shame that we're going to lose McGinn now. And he was talking about the referee getting caught up in what had happened over the sideline then after the tackle. Again, we'll talk about that later. But it's people are so quick to excuse it, and you see this online as well, that, you know, to go from 2-0, then the player gets sent off, then of course it's going to be 4-0. Like, that's not on. Shipping four goals in one half isn't good enough. And it doesn't feel like that is ever a wild impossibility with this team. Like, it's always a very live possibility that at any stage some team could run up four goals against us. A goal every 10 minutes, basically. It's a shambles.
Yeah, and this team has collapsed too many times. I mean, once we go behind against a good team, it seems like we're just inevitably going to lose. And People are saying, like, oh, we went down to 10 men, then that makes up. We're 2-0 down at that stage. The game was over. That's why McGinn got sent off, because he was fucking pissed off that we were getting hammered by Spurs. It was fucking grim. The first 15 minutes were really grim. And I was sitting there thinking, I knew it. I knew more about football than Unai Emery. I knew more about these players, about Spurs, about winning football matches, than a man who's won 500 games at the top level of the world's most popular sport, than a man who's won 40% of the Europa Leagues in the last decade. That's how bad we were today. That's how disappointing today was. That's how obvious the errors were and how pathetic the players were. That's how blinded by rage I was. How blinded by fucking tears, if I'm being honest, Colin. Like, I can't remember being this disappointed about anything. And listen, I know Unai Emery knows more than me. All right, I admit it. And he's done more for me. He's done more for me and my happiness than I probably have for myself. But that doesn't mean Unai Emery didn't have a fucking stinker today. You do not switch to a back five to deal with a front four that has Brennan Johnson, James Maddison, and Dejan Kulusevski in it. Timo Werner scored against us today, Conan. We were playing against a team with the same defensive record as Man United. And instead of figuring out how we were going to exploit that, we set up a fear at the end of the day with a worse defensive record than both of those teams.
Oh, God.
Spurs were the better team in the reverse fixture and got through a lot. But we're playing at home today. We had to figure out how to control the game offensively, not go into our fucking shells.
Stan Collymore tweeted saying that he would love, in games like this, to see a cinch, just a tiny bit more pragmatism. And I was thinking, Jesus, like, we didn't have a shot. We didn't have the ball. If we weren't trying to be pragmatic today, like, that's more concerning. You know, I assumed he was trying to be more pragmatic. Play five at the back, keep it tight. Maybe we'll hit them on the break. And you could see that was the sort of intent. You know, Watkins and Bailey might get in behind. But that was never going to work with Bailey playing in a number 10 position, doing what he was doing today. After 20 minutes, I was like, I need to take this boy off. And who would have thought I would ever say that about Leon Bailey? it was disappointing. It was, somebody took me at halftime saying, would you take a draw? And even then, when we weren't playing well, but because I was also aware that we had limited Spurs to doing anything as well, but it was just like, you know, there's a big opportunity here. There's a big opportunity to go 8 points clear of Spurs and actually to go back into the title race. To go, like, we'd be 4 points off the top of the table now. That was the opportunity that we had at home to Spurs. You need to win these games. And we've shown we can do that. I mean, why would we go 5-2 against Spurs and we wouldn't do that against Man City? Instead, we just went out and outplayed Man City with 4-2 of Yuri Tielemans in midfield in that 4. Like, we did that. We did that only a couple of months ago, and today we're just so far removed from it all.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, so disappointing. The reasons you said there as well. But the idea that we do this against Spurs, probably just based on the fact that Spurs got through a lot at home against us. And do you know what the most frustrating thing about this was? Playing Ajax was actually the perfect preparation for this game. Like, perfect for the manager and perfect for those fucking players as well. But we took nothing from it. And I don't know why I'm surprised. Like, we learned nothing in that game either. Like, we never reacted to the pressure, to the press that Ajax were putting on. We did nothing to exploit Spurs' front foot defending either. And Spurs, despite how fragile their fan base is, their back four, Sarr and Bissouma, were tough, really, really tough to play against. But what's the response? Like, I love how calm we are, how we try to play. But I don't know if these players can be trusted to apply that strategy, that general principle, game to game. Like, we're trying to keep the ball, wait for opportunities, pull the opposition around. We're trying to play like a top team. Like, the players aren't trying to play like that, though. Like, they're trying to play like the opposition or Sheffield United. Like, you can be calm and keep possession and not play at a fucking snail's pace. You can exploit Spurs' high line by kicking the ball from your keeper's hands into the back four of a set team, a top five set up defensive team. It was pathetic. Like, how many times do you have to feel the press before you do something about it? Like, yeah. How many times do you have to touch the iron before you realize it's hot? We were standing in front of a fucking steamroller waving our arms. We were trying to get away from a train by running down the tracks. Step off the tracks, do something fucking different.
You're so right, because there was one stage, I think it was Konsa, on the end line, holding the ball, looking to thread a pass, and with a man holding him on the end line. And I was thinking, sometimes that opportunity is gone. Like, you know, I don't really remember what happened from that play, but it was just it just showed me that these boys are coached, and then like they just go through, they're just going through those patterns no matter what. We'll just keep playing at them again, no matter who's climbing all over them. We'll just keep trying to feed that ball in, or we'll just keep standing on the ball, like you say, playing patient. I mean, at one stage, and this is the really annoying thing, bang, bang, 2 goals in 2 minutes after halftime, and then an injury time then as well. Bang, bang, 2 goals and injury time. If you ever needed, you know, a sight of someone giving up, there it was right in front of you. But the fourth goal went in. We're still in injury time here. There's 3 minutes left of our misery. And Emery points to his head as if, come on, let's get it back under control. It's like, there's nothing about this second half is under control. And like, right now is not the time to, maybe he had to do that so we didn't ship a fifth goal and a sixth goal. Maybe he was right, because Spurs were in the mood at that stage.
Yeah, more concerning are the goals just after halftime. We talked about this months ago. We talked about just our propensity to let teams score the first 5-10 minutes after halftime. It's absolutely terrifying how regularly we allow this to happen. I don't know what is happening in that changing room that we come out for games unprepared to play a second half of football. I mean, this would be more understandable if it was the start of games that was happening, but the start of the second half, it's so fucking strange.
What did you think of the John McGinn red card? I've never seen a red card, and this is beyond the Villa fan base as well, on Twitter mostly, but I've never seen a red card be so polar opposite in the how the opinion is driving. You know, like, people think it's the biggest joke, the game's gone, and other people are starting, a lot of Villa fans as well, like, what are we talking about here? He just ran over and kicked him. I mean, the thing I would say about this, it's like, I think this is clear justification, clear evidence to go and do the Barcelona on it for every referee. I think in another instance, right, I'm not defending John McGinn for 1 second, because I'll come to how stupid it was in a second, but if that's going down the other wing and it's just a trip and Udogie bounces up the way he does, and you know, him and John McGinn square up and then everybody carries on, he's probably getting a yellow card there. But when every Spurs, now in fairness, every time he tackles a Spurs player, you sort of think, shit, has he broken his leg? There's always a big reaction. The players always rolling around. And then the furore, like the coaching team were in, and Ange wasn't, in fairness, good lad. And the players are over, they're pushing, they're screaming at the ref, and the ref flashes the red card now because he's hot under the collar now as well. I think, like, I don't blame Spurs. It's like, go do that. Like, that's how you get a referee to give it a season that you want. On the other hand, John McGinn runs over and kicks him. And the thing is, like, it is a trip, but it's wild, it's reckless, it's forceful. It almost certainly does fall under the category offence for a red card. So I don't see it as being successful for an appeal as well. And because it was a trip, it's so disappointing as well. It's like, if you were going to do that, you might as well have done, like, you know, you were running the risk of getting sent off by running over and kicking someone. So you might as well have done something worse if you were going to do it.
Well, like the propensity for the Spurs players to have a little cry for themselves is one of the most disappointing things about how much we were spanked today as well, and how difficult the game was in general, how much pressure they put us under in both games, actually, against Spurs this season. That is not a team of individuals that should be able to make Aston Villa feel like that. They shouldn't. That's not a team of players who should be putting Aston Villa under that much pressure. Like I said, fucking Brennan Johnson and James Maddison are spearheading their attack today. But I honestly don't think I've ever seen a red card given for that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I think it wasn't a red card. It was a scumbag tackle from John McGinn. It was pathetic. He's just run over and kicked somebody who thought he was playing a game of football. Like, well done, John. Oh, captain, my captain. And look, Conan, we're all human. You and I, everyone listening, I suspect what I'm about to say is true of them. I don't suspect we're all human. I know that. I know that's true. Like, we all lose the rag, lose our temper, lose our composure. And that's why none of us are captains of the fifth best team of the world's best league, of the world's most popular sport. We don't have the mentality that John McGinn is supposed to have. He can't just run over at full speed and kick somebody. Like, that is absolutely pathetic from John McGinn. And it comes immediately after he fucks up a pass back to Zaniolo as well. He can't, what the fuck does he think he's doing there? Never mind the fact that he's running the risk of getting a red card. What does he think he's doing? Yeah. What does he think he's achieving by doing that?
I wouldn't even mind, you know, if it wasn't John McGinn, who we know he can just run, barge him out of the way, get the ball and swivel and go for it. He was doing it for the first 20 minutes of that second half. Like that's the really disappointing thing about it. Where in that second half, I was like, well, there's a boy trying to get us back into the match. Like, there's a boy, like, one stage looked like he was literally trying to drag us back up, go back and win it, charge it, play it to somebody, somebody would lose it, he'd win it back, sprint back up the pitch, create a chance. And like, he could have just done that there. I know your dog, he shifts it. Like, he gets his right foot in the way, so he moves it to the left side of his body. And McGinn just gives up. It was like, my point is, if that was, say, a Jordan Henderson or somebody who's just lost their faculties or their ability to now compete athletically at this level, you'd be like, yeah, fair enough, he's frustrated and he can't do anything about it. That would be really annoying. McGinn can just run to the other side of him. He can be a bit more patient. And, you know, there's still 34 minutes left of this match, including injury time. Like, that's what he had left to try and get us back into the match, 11-11. And now he's out. We've got 10 games left of this running. Our captain is gone for 30% of it now. He's gone. And I don't know who we play. I don't want to play Tim. I don't want to come down too hard on him. But I'm not excited by that prospect. I don't think it's a good idea to play him. Jacob Ramsey, God knows where he is. He's getting injured every other week. If Jacob Ramsey's back next week, let's do a quick detour on him. If he's back next week, I'm going to be really disappointed on him. Because it's like, surely you could have, I said a few weeks ago, I was praising us, we're at wartime now. Boys are digging in, we're in the trenches, they're all been strapped up and going for it. If he comes back a few days later from this big, massive match, I'd have me suspicions that he could have forced himself to be ready today. I mean, people are talking about, like, Marcus Rashford is getting praised for playing through injury. Marcus Rashford. Like, this is the world we're living in. And Jacob Ramsey's like, and I don't even know if he's going to be back next week. Maybe I should suspend my criticism of him. He could be out for another few months.
What's your degree in again, Connor?
Sports science.
Yeah, maybe that should be fucking suspended as well. Fuck me, mate. If Jacob Ramsey is injured, he's injured.
The science of getting on with it and digging in, that's what it was.
You started that rant there by talking about you doggies shifting the ball. That was irrelevant, Conan. John McGinn wasn't trying to win that ball. He was trying to hurt you doggie. It was pathetic. He deserves his red card. And now we have to put up with the consequences of it from our fucking captain.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah. Let's go through these fucking goals, will we? First one, James Maddison. It's a cross, obviously. Look at Dean has sprung so far up here. I can't imagine this is part of the plan. He's so far up. And once again, we're saying the most effective thing in football is committing a tackler and then getting lucky. Is it Buendia that I used to praise for this? It was like, and Cash. Sometimes Cash is effective because he's always on the verge of losing the ball. He's always pushing it forward. He draws people, bobbles, and away we go. And this is what happens. And then they're in behind Torres and Tielemans. Good night, Irene. It's a lovely crossing, but it's a crossing to 2-on-1. There's two Aston Villa players in there. There's one James Maddison in there, and Douglas Luiz and Cash can't compete with James Maddison in there, who wants a game. I mean, Stato's not going to include this. You know, crosses, heads, headers into the net. He doesn't have to head it into the net. He can volley it into the net because there's not enough pressure on him.
Yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant cross from Sar, right, I admit it. Well done. I'm not sure what Torres is out there, to be honest, either. It looks like he's trying to hide. Because he's not trying to catch anybody offside. He's trying to catch them by surprise. He's doing his honkers. I don't know what he's doing. Like I think once he's gone with the rest of his backline, like gone away from the rest of his backline, once he's tried to sneak up, once he sees that Clement Longley is the covering defender, he has to go full-blooded at full speed, interrupt this play, stop the ball with your hand, do something. This is the biggest game of the season. You fucked up. You're out of position. You're square to the ball. You're so square, you might as well put on a pair of flare jeans and braces. Do something dramatic here, mate. Stop this play from progressing. Clement Longley can't do anything about this because he's Clement Longley and because it's Torres' fault, right? But Clement Longley needs to get tighter to Sar there. Like he has to know that there's a cross coming. Suggest to Sar that he might be closed down. You do not need to defend your box against a centre midfielder on the wing. Get out to him. Make him think you're moving towards him. Don't just let him swing across in unopposed. Sar nearly fell over there and had a chance to correct himself before he picked out the cross. And big fucking James Maddison makes a nuisance of himself in the middle. What is going on here? James Maddison looked like Alan Shearer there. Cons and Cash should be ashamed of themselves. James Maddison has had public spats about who came up with his shit celebration first. And do you know why his celebration is him throwing an imaginary dart? Throwing an imaginary dart badly, I should say. Because he likes darts. Like, what the fuck does that mean? I like sandwiches. I never run over to the away fans buttering a slice of bread. It's fucking pathetic. And he also looks like he's never thrown a dart in his life. Like, we conceded three goals today from players who have been convinced by some numpty in the marketing department of their agent's company that they need to come up with a celebration for fucking TikTok. And a fourth goal from a player that nobody has bothered saying that to because he never scores.
Well, the second goal is the worst of them all. Not only because it's a nail in our coffin, but it's just, it's unforgivable. This Konsa pass, and he's not the only one to blame here, but this pass, like, if an under nine player did this, I would not be happy with him. Like, it's just, I get that people aren't moving for you, but Tielemans is still there to play the ball to. You've decided to come in here yourself, take yourself out of position, and now turn your body to see who's behind you, and you still can't play the ball across to Tielemans. You play it behind him. All right, Tielemans is so flat footed, but it's not even like, oh, Tielemans got caught flat footed there. I just mean Tielemans is so flat footed in general. So he's not getting back the way he's just like, it's almost like he's doing a stretch when he's looking at the ball. Oh, God. I can't. And then Konsa jumps into the air to complain about it. It's like, one of you get back. None of them do. Son gives it to Brennan Johnson after Kulusevski intercepts it. And Brennan Johnson scores against us because we've just concocted an absolute balls up. Like, definitely the winner of the Peter Eichmann What the Fuck Award.
It's fucking dreadful from Konsa. It's fucking dreadful from Tielemans. And it's fucking dreadful from Louise as well. Like, Konsa has to play that ball to Tielemans' feet. And not because there's anything particularly wrong with the pass. I mean, it's slightly to the side of a Premier League centre midfielder. But because, like he said, he has to know what Tinky Winky is like. Tealy Tubby doesn't want that ball. He doesn't want to be playing in this game. He wants to be standing around at the edge of the Burnley 18-yard box playing balls that nearly make it through to one of our runners so he can say, oh, that would have been nice, wouldn't it? Like, fucking hell, move your feet, Tielemans.
Yeah.
Douglas Luiz, like, we couldn't have praised Douglas Luiz anymore this season. And obviously, like, you know, I'm not saying we're big men for doing that. Like, you know, that's the most obvious thing in the world. But Douglas Luiz is watching his centre half on the ball looking for an option and just keeps watching him. And it was Ezri Konsa as well. Like, normally, and you won't be able to understand this, normally when one of the other top players is on the ball, there's something psychologically that makes you want to help them out more. Probably just because you like them more. Maybe because you know your effort will probably not be in vain. But I don't know why our centre midfielder isn't looking for the ball from our centre half. Do you?
I have no idea. But I also just don't know why Konsa can't just play the ball to Tielemans. Like, that is the worst of all the what the fucks in this one goal. I think Konsa's is the worst.
I think Tielemans should realise there's a Premier League footballer behind him. He should move to the ball quicker. He should realise the game he's playing. He's been playing in it for fucking 53 minutes at this stage. And he shouldn't just stretch out his right foot to try and control the ball. But that sums up Tielemans. That's the way Tielemans plays. Everything has to be perfect. Everything has to be nice. Fucking move to the ball, pal. There's a winger behind you.
The third goal. I mean, Son, in fairness, shows the value of sort of standing still when everyone else and everything else is moving around you. If you watch it, he's offside and you're like, oh, what's he going to do here? He's going to be offside. Is he? And he actually just stays offside, lets the whole line go past him, and he stays in that position and gets the ball pulled back. Now, Zaniolo and Moreno down the wing. I mean, we thought it was bad there with Longley and Lukadin and Tielemans. I don't know what these, but this is pathetic. It's 2-on-2 right there. It's 2-on-2. And somebody ends up in 20 yards of space once again, getting to stand there and pick out a pass into the box. That's a good finish from Son, who stands still, but it's a good decision to stand still because he's watching all these gimps just run past him.
Yeah, Moreno and Zaniolo, like, they cannot believe their luck that Moreno going down on his haunches and stretching his leg out like he's doing the fucking Przyjatka hasn't resulted in a turnover. So then they get a bit more contemporary and look like they're fucking yipped off their tits, head down, punching the air like they're a fucking rave. What are they doing? Get back!
Who benefits that for? Like, that's not impressing me one bit. There's no part of me. It's like, oh, yeah, they really care. They really care that they ballsed up. Of course they care. Do something about it, like you say. Try and help. Like, that's the old Arsenal mentality. I'm saying old as well. Like, how sad is that? You know, we're just be too expressive because they know somebody on their online will cut it up and say, look, that's real passion there. He does care about the club. Like, Zaniolo doing that doesn't make me think he cares about the club. Him running back would make me think he does.
It makes me think he cares about not having the ball at his feet because he doesn't fucking want to. He doesn't want to put in any effort to get it. He just wants it to come to him easy. Run back. Tim Arubinim doesn't react to cover the space either. I mean, he has to be more clued in there. That ball is getting pulled back. Our entire defense has obviously drifted towards the goal line. We love that. But and Tim just kind of stands at the edge of the box and then starts moving when the cutback is so obvious that he can't miss it. It's slapping him in the face. And then that's obviously far too late. Douglas Luiz as well, of course, he's jogging back into space. He's looking at all this play develop. He's looking at the most dangerous player on the pitch, standing at the edge of the box, completely isolated, completely free, and jogging back in. If Son is standing free in the box and neither of our two defensive midfielders can do anything about it, then Jesus Christ almighty, what is the point of watching the next 10 games?
And the fourth goal, you mentioned him. And this is why I didn't know how I ended up going on a drive-by of Jacob Ramsey, but it was because I was talking about Tim coming in to replace John McGinn, and the fourth goal especially made me think, I don't want this. He's too passive. He's just too passive. Like, people are just running by him. He's too polite almost sometimes. And I was just looking at him for this fourth goal thinking, nah, like this. And that's why then I thought, who else is there? I thought, maybe Jacob Ramsey. And I was like, where the fuck's he? And I started getting angry about him. The fourth goal is annoying for so many reasons, because of Tim, because of Cash. Like, Son just knocks it around Cash so easily. But it's also because this is now, what is it, in 1 month, Hoyland, Jackson and Werner have all scored against us.
Tim plays like that attitude I was talking about today. He plays like he's playing against Sheffield United. He's playing like the opposition have stepped off and are standing at the edge of their own box, and he's just waiting on the ball. Like, these lads are manic. They're running at you nonstop. You can't play like that against these teams. Like I said, you can be calm, you can keep possession, but you have to move the fucking ball quickly because the opposition players are moving quickly. And there was more space in that Aston Villa box than there was in the Villa Park stands, and that's fucking saying something at this stage of the game. And I completely understand as well, because if the players aren't going to try for you, why would you try for them? Timo Werner has popped up in our box and faded one into the far corner, Connor. Why the fuck would you stick around for that?
Yeah. Very, very disappointing day. Very long top of the show. We'll take a break and we'll come back with WhatsApp whinges. Matt Cash played one down the line, right, to Leon Bailey. And Bailey just gave up on it. It was going along the sideline. And it was like he was hoping it would go out. I mean, the game's on, man. Come on. It was 0-0 at this stage. The game has started. Wake up.
Yeah, it was so strange. It was like he heard the ironic cheers of the Spurs fans and just assumed the ball had gone out of play instead of looking at the ball. It wasn't even close to going out of play. I think it might have licked the inside of the sideline. And he just stopped running. And it was definitely his. But it was a good pass from Matt Cash. Yeah, write that down. I said it, Connor. It was a good pass from Matt Cash.
I've got a new award category that I want to do in WhatsApp whinges. It's called the James Madison Award for I'm Not As Hard As I'd Like People to Think. So we've got a few nominations here to talk about. I mean, a lot of these Spurs boys were getting all up in my grill in this match. Brandon Johnson, I mean, twice, you know, just coming at Matt Cash, just swiping him down. Maybe the third time he deserved a yellow card. I don't think it was, to me, it was obvious. This boy's been on Twitter too much. I mean, when the John McGinn foul happened, Brandon Johnson just electing himself to try and be the club's hard man. How sad is that? That Brandon Johnson wants to be your hard man. Just too aware of the petty sort of backstory coming into this match. Van de Ven on Watkins. I mean, do you think this was a penalty?
No, I think Watkins has taken a shit touch and Van de Ven has gotten to the ball just about enough.
Yeah. He took a really good touch. It's a long ball. Watkins took a good touch initially. He made Cutie look like a fool. Got around him.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
And yeah, Bailey's inside, but he's thinking about a shot. And Van de Ven's he's a flyer. We know that. And
I think Watkins did. I think that's the problem. Yeah, like Watkins tries to kick the ball towards the goals.
I think you're right. And it looked like he just kicked Watkins up into there. But yeah, I think he might have got the ball. It was the same with the other penalty shirt as well, the Bailey one. Initially, I thought it was definitely a penalty. I thought he had done Bissouma. And you know, Basima doesn't really get to, it comes over the ball, but it's not like he just completely swiped Bailey off his feet. He was on the ball and sort of tripped over.
Yeah, no, he's come over the ball well before he actually touches Bailey. Like, he's nowhere near him. It's actually the other foot that touches him as well, I think. But Brennan Johnson showed us everything about Brennan Johnson in that first half as well, and that's how the game should have progressed. Brennan, he got the ball and he just ran out of play or passed the ball out of play, gave someone a shit pass. He didn't want anything to do with trying to take on Matt Cash, of all people, as well. I mean, he was shite because he's not very good at football. And then we let him run around acting the hard man after that. Bizarre.
Speaking of running around acting the hard man, definitely the winner of this award is James Maddison. He's squaring up to Douglas Luiz, and then Bailey trips him at one stage, and he's staring at him, stares him down from the ground. It's like, remember Ben Chilwell against Liverpool in the Carabao Cup final? That was the vibes that James Maddison was giving off. Like, never give off Ben Chilwell vibes. And then you doggy, he was the only other nomination, bouncing up from the John McGinn challenge and then falling over. I was wondering, right, because initially I thought it was funny that he tried to bounce up and it was probably actually really hurt that he fell over with the very next step, because it did happen that way. But I was also wondering then, I was like, did he realize it was a better idea to fall over and go back down and get the red card?
I don't know. I think he dog, he's annoyingly good. And I think that actually just his knee was just annoyingly jarred by John the scumbag McGinn, that he couldn't actually stand up. And I think the fact that he bounced straight up probably tells you more about him than the fact that he ended up falling back down, the fact that he wanted to stand up, the fact that he knew it was a bad tackle. Yeah, he's a good player. I'd take him in a fucking heartbeat.
I don't like playing against boys who are really good and really fast and stuff, but they're so big. You're just big. Oh, just everything's in your way. It's so hard to get around. I don't like boys like that.
Yeah, and once you line him up as well, you can tell he. And I don't know if it is just because of how fast he is that you think, I can't do anything against this guy, but they always just seem, his body position just always seems to be right. You can't line him up. You can't. He's too quick at adjusting his feet as well. Like, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare for somebody like me because I was never particularly fast. But it looked like it was a nightmare for somebody like Ian Bailey as well, who we know really, really is fast. He didn't know what to do whenever he was facing him.
What brings us on to our first WhatsApp wins nicely? Because that Bailey pass to Diaby, the 8 meter offside one, like, that is one of the worst things I've ever seen. Probably the worst thing I've ever seen. and for both people, like, it's pathetic from Diaby. It's pathetic from Bailey. They both know. They clearly both know that they're offside, and still Diaby wanders into that position, and still Bailey plays that ball into that position. So sad that we've resorted to that.
There's something strange happens to Leon Bailey whenever Diaby's on the pitch of him. I think Leon Bailey thinks he has to try and play nice passes to him or something because he's a rival for his position, because they're both from the same club. They might know each other a while. Maybe they get on really well. I don't know what it is, but Leon Bailey does some odd things with Diaby. He tries to play him passes that he shouldn't be playing him. He doesn't play like Leon Bailey should be playing whenever Diaby's on the pitch. I haven't been able to figure out what it is or why it is, more importantly. But Diaby had such a strange game. Like, Diaby crossed the ball, and maybe you're going to come on to this. Diaby crossed the ball in about 3 or 4 times during that game, just because he got free, just because he could cross the ball. It's like, it's one of those ones that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you would have heard the commentator saying it's a great ball, somebody's in there. Like, it's a shit ball, and nobody's in there.
Going up in the Lima meter, the commentator for not resorting to that, the commentator for not saying it's a good ball, but no one's there.
And he was given plenty of opportunity to say it as well. And given how shit a co-commentator we had today as well, I'm surprised it didn't happen.
Yeah. Like, so the offside pass, I still think, is the worst thing I've seen. But then the second WhatsApp wins, Højbjerg doing Douglas Luiz, oh, and then Tim, God, is actually the worst thing I've ever seen on a football pitch.
I, without a doubt, that's our two defensive midfielders being skipped by a big lumbering defensive midfielder. I mean, I have liked Højbjerg in the past. I love the fact that his best game of the year is always against Man City. He just comes out of the fucking cave and plays against them like a fucking absolute hero. It's brilliant. But Højbjerg skipping past our two defensive midfielders is the second worst thing that happened today. Third worst thing that happened today. The other two things both involve Højbjerg, but are about Douglas Luiz. Whenever Højbjerg spins around, pirouettes past Douglas Luiz. Douglas Luiz stands there again, looking at the skies, if he can't believe it. I feel a bit of sympathy for Douglas Luiz. I can't believe that happened either. But I can't believe it happened to you, Douglas. Now, go back and get that ball. And what, Jesus Christ. Like, Højbjerg just dropped his shoulder against him. Yeah. Are you taking the piss? Like, he walked past him. And I don't mean he actually walked. I mean, that's the pace that Emile Pierre Højbjerg can move at.
Yeah. You know, a bit of footwork to get away from Douglas Luiz. Tim, he ran towards him and then went to the left. Like, that was it. He didn't do a step over. He didn't shift the ball quickly. He just decided to now go to the left. And that was enough to get by Tim. Like, our guy to come in to replace John McGinn with Kamara gone as well. And not only was it that he skipped by the two of them, this was over the a phase of, what, 50 metres? Our two-centre midfielders just let somebody come pissing through the middle of the pitch for 50 yards.
Absolutely pathetic.
The last WhatsApp wins. Good man, Nicolo, kicked the ball away when we were chasing the game.
You know what the worst thing about that was? How pathetic the connection was. Like, he barely even kicked the ball. That tells you everything about Nicolo Zaniolo.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back after this.
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
We're going to start with the thoughts of the Villa Podcast.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
And do these people turn up to funerals or wakes saying, come on, get over it. It's the Doherty family, not the great Auntie Margaret family. I guess it's time to find out what Uncle Jimmy's really made of. Fucking psychopaths. Let me mourn.
Sherwood gets the job. England go to the World Cup, lose to Belgium in the group, beat Colombia, beat Sweden. Do they beat Croatia? I know you think they do. I know you think that Tim Sherwood beats Croatia.
Dean Smith is a roller coaster fan. Dean Smith has never met a woman that he fancied and didn't tell her.
I feel like I have to explain to her. I do enjoy supporting Aston Villa.
His first year at treble winners, barring they were beaten 5-0 by Real Madrid in the Champions League. He didn't even win the double in his second season. Oh, but he played Philipp Lahm out of position. You know who didn't play Philipp Lahm in midfield? Treble winner Jupp Heynckes. Do you know who had to play Philippe Coutinho in midfield? Treble winner Hansi Flick. The son of a Monte Carlo banker gambles that a non-consequential footballer standing over the most consequential kick in the sport is going to open up his body and whip it across into the side net.
Yeah, I went through all those scenarios and stuff that you would say and stuff that Gerard's obviously thinking, and then I just wrote down, just figure it out. Like, it's not my problem. You figure it out.
The hills are alive with the sound of people talking absolute shit.
Let's do the Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award first. I don't think it's going to be any beating the Konsa Tielemans connection for the second goal. You wanted to add Douglas Luiz in there as well. But I've got two more Konsa nominations, and one of them is a pass to John McGinn in that position where he has a player up his up, not a player up his arse, because John McGinn's usually good at that. He's got a player ahead of him, basically. And Cairns are still playing. And he did the same to Youri Tielemans. I mean, what's one thing when to John McGinn, but playing at the Tielemans in that position from the byline? Come on, like, there has to be another way.
Yeah, and there probably was another way if we played the ball a bit quicker. Cairns is on the ball for so long then, and he has to eventually has to play a pass. I mean, that's the game of football for you. And the only semblance of a pass that is now available to him because he's dawdled on the ball for so long is John McGinn standing behind fucking James Maddison, whoever it was.
And the only other nomination I have for the What the Fuck Award is that Diego Carlos coming on to tee up Kulusevski at the end.
So strange. I mean, I'm not sure what he's trying to do there. There's no excuse for taking a touch that heavy. I don't care what position the pitch you are, how quickly you're running back. He's just rolled it out with the outside of his boot to an opposition player inside on the penalty spot, like inside our own box. I mean, what are you doing, man? Like, put your side foot through that, get it out of the box, or just control the ball. within a yard of your own body. I mean, you're a professional footballer. It's pathetic. Mm. I think you have to also nominate Højbjerg running through the middle of our pitch past our two defensive midfielders. And yeah. Maybe we'll come back to him in the Vyman meter, but I'm just bringing him into this. Douglas Luiz was lying on the ground after he dived in the 90th minute when Højbjerg tickled him under the fucking chin. Lying on the ground looking at the sky while the play was just pissing away in front of him.
Yeah.
I nearly think that was worse than getting pirouetted. And this is the strangest sentence I've ever heard. That was worse than Højbjerg pirouetting past him.
The worst thing is, right, and it's wrapped in a bit of a compliment, is that every time we talk about how good these boys are, it's every time they have the ball, they can score. But because we know that they can score every time they have the ball, it's not on that they do stuff like that then, that they down the tools, that, you know, what, even if it's 3-0, we still know when you get the ball, you can do something with it. You can't just have people completely give up, lie on the ground, dive, throw their hands to the sky, feel sorry for themselves. Just get the ball and go forward again and try and score. But they just lose sight of it, and it becomes a capitulation. And it's just, I'm talking about Champions League credentials. It's not that happens too much that we can just open up. Like, actually, you know what? Before you come in on that, let's jump to the Ulrik Glenn Whelan taking 90th minute penalty award, because we do need to talk about the five at the back thing, because it's actually funny. I was thinking about it during the week. I was like, was that this season that we were just doing this five at the back thing in August? Remember we kept changing to that in every game, and then it just went away. We just stopped doing it, and I was like, what was that about? Is it ever going to come back? And suddenly it came back. It must have been something in the waters, but like, the reality is that we have been susceptible to this sort of thing. Obviously, today didn't help. It didn't work. It didn't work out the way we wanted. But is there any part of you that can see where Unai Emery is coming from? Or, like if you look at the way we've been playing with four at the back and the four midfield, it's just, it's lost a bit of spark as well. And mostly defensively. But I also heard a stat during the week that Sheffield United has a better expected goals conceded than we do over the last, whatever it is, 6 weeks. And we scored five goals against them in that period. And like, us and Man United were below Sheffield United was the stat. And like, that's not, you do not want to be in the company of Man United.
And Sheffield United, Christ almighty. To answer your question, no, I can't see where he's coming from. I think there's different ways to defend that doesn't have to involve ripping up your entire system. And not only that, switching to a back five today changes the mentality of both teams.
Yeah.
It tells Spurs that we're afraid, and it tells our players that we've got something to lose today other than everything to win. We should have been getting into that game at home, remember, against a direct rival, trying to go 8 points ahead of them, not trying to hold on to five. And you can forget about back fives and back fours. That doesn't really matter. If we're playing a back five, how are we scoring, Conan? How are we trying to score today? And trying to score cannot involve Emi Martinez standing with his hands on the ball, everybody back in position, and then him trying to kick a ball into the 20 yards of space between the Spurs backline and the goalkeeper. Mm. That can't be our primary mode of attack. That is absolutely bonkers. And if that is, then who is up with Ollie Watkins? So not only are we just trying to kick the ball into that tiny area of space to Ollie Watkins, we're then asking Ollie Watkins to score. It's like, yeah, try to win this ball, Ollie, and then try to score as well. Like, Bailey doesn't have a clue what to do there. I mean, if this was the system, just play Diaby. Just play Zaniolo. Like, just play Zaniolo up with him. And then release Bailey whenever you inevitably have to switch to a back four anyway, because this system is bollocks.
Yeah, you'd almost... It's all well and good in hindsight. But... And obviously
it's not good in hindsight.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously he's got credit in the bank, and the players trust what he's doing. So nobody's going to do this, really, is my point. But you'd almost want... You know, when it's raised that we're going to go this way, and mentality wise, we're going to go this way. you want a bit of like, oh no, let's go take them on. We've been hammering everybody in Villa Park. Let's just go and beat them. We outplayed Man City. Let's just go do that. Ollie Watkins should be saying, oh, hey, don't worry, give me the chance, I'll score. I mean, give me three chances, I'll definitely score one of them. But you'd almost want the players, you know, backing themselves in that front. I mean, that can be a powerful thing as well from a manager's point of view. The players can be and said, no, we want to do it. And look, we've got Pau Torres back as well. We haven't had, let's just play him and Konsa. It'll be grand. Let's just get back to what we've been doing. I mean, we've been crying out for Konsa and Pau Torres, and they were there. They were both there, but we put them in their back five.
Yeah, and that's the other frustrating thing. I mean, we have got a lot of injuries, but from our first 11, Kamara is out, but John McGinn has been brilliant replacing him in that position.
Yeah.
And Ramsey is a big loss because Ramsey changes the way we can play. Like that's the main thing, that Ramsey has been brilliant since he came back, but we have been better whenever he's there in an attacking sense just because of the space that Jacob Ramsey can find because he's so clever and can exploit because he's so fast whenever it develops as well. And he does move the ball a lot quicker than all our players. So those two players are a big loss, but they're not completely irreplaceable. I mean, we've played most of the season without Jacob Ramsey. And like I said, John McGinn is a perfectly able replacement for Kamara. So I think it's strange that he ceded so much to Spurs, obviously spooked by the fact that they ran straight through us multiple times at Spurs' stadium, though. Let's get control of this game. Let's get a connection with the fans going on. Yeah. Let's not have 30% possession at home. That is fucking pathetic for this team. It's not the way we play. I don't know what he was thinking. I think a big problem for him as well, he was probably spooked by Tim and Morgan's performances against Ajax because they were not good whenever they were given the start midweek. That probably affected his thinking as well. He probably thought, I can't pick one of them. I can't just play Rodgers on the left against Spurs. It's not possible. We could play Diaby up front. Diaby costs 50 million quid. I know I'm not exactly the biggest advocate for Diaby in the last couple of weeks, but he could have played Tielemans on the left, Diaby up front, Bailey on the right. Let's just go for strongest team. Let's try to win this game 5-4 instead of fucking losing 4-0.
Yeah, which we're well capable of doing. Like, we have shown that. Like, it doesn't matter. I go into games confident, in a way, and not confident. So I know we're going to leak goals, but I never think we're not going to win. I always know we've got a chance of winning because I think we'll score more than the other team.
Yeah, and we're well capable of winning 5-4, and Spurs are well fucking capable of losing 5-4 as well. Yeah. That's the really frustrating thing.
Yeah, no, it's a shame. Like, you get into this position, and it's right there, 11 games to go. Like, it requires a bit of aggression now. Like, we're not going to get it by holding on. We need to go for it. Like, we can't play safe. And we need to, like, we need to embrace. I know we were in the position, so with that comes a bit of pressure. But drawing wasn't really that good either. Didn't help us. You know, we needed to embrace being the disruptors. Even if we're in the position that we have everything to lose, we're still the ones that are upsetting the apple cart here. And so it doesn't matter. Like, that's the way to shift the mindset. It's like, you know, we're coming here to take something that people don't want us to have. Let's just go. Let's just keep attacking it because other people are getting scared. Like, it's way worse for Spurs in the grand scheme of things to lose top four to Villa. You know, considering where we've come from, it's way worse for them. Like, we need to embrace that, and we still can. It's not over, but like, the reality is now we've got McGinn out for 3 games, and we need to. we need to beat some of these teams now coming up. We need to beat a Man City, a Liverpool, an Arsenal. And the really disappointing thing is there's, I think it's from April 8th, maybe. Don't quote me on that, but Spurs have 4 games in a row, starts in Newcastle away. Then they've got the top three. They've got them all in a row. Plus Newcastle away to start a run of 4 games. And I was thinking, if we can get into that position in good shape, then we'll see. But now I'm worried that we'll be out of the race by the time they have to play those big games. You know, we need to keep the pressure on. The way to do that is to keep attacking, keep being the way we've been, the identity that we've all seen us grow into over the last year and a half.
Absolutely. And I think you're right as well. I don't want to drag us back into our doom loop here, but West Ham away, Wolves anywhere on the planet Earth, and Man City are not ideal fixtures for Aston Villa Football Club.
Great, yeah. Let's go through a very quick Rosenthal Award, because as we've talked on the Graham Whedon Award, we didn't create a lot of chances. And all I can say is thank God Ollie Watkins was offside. He is lucky. He is one lucky boy when he went through 2-on-1 with that goalkeeper. And Ollie Watkins somehow balls it up. They're in behind the defence. They're in front of a really timid goalkeeper. Ollie Watkins just put it away himself, but he can't even roll across the Bailey for an open net. Puts it behind him. It was like a Konza pass.
It was an absolutely dreadful. That's the worst thing about this. Not even that he not just roll the ball past Vicario, is that he played a bad. For the pass is so bad. The decision to play it and then to fuck it up so badly is insane.
Yeah, I was never as glad to see an offside flag going up. The Bailey put Watkins through on Cutie, and at one stage it's actually 3-on-2. If we can just get that other man, it's Tielemans. It is 3-on-2, but here I am back in the doom loop waiting for Tielemans to catch up on the play, and he's not going to get there in time. And Watkins shifts it on his right and think it's blocked down.
Yeah, you don't have to try to remember. You can, if you can't remember, just assume it was blocked down. Just assume that before the ball made it a yard past one of our players' foot, that a Spurs player got a foot in there. That was was so frustrating. How easily read all our players were, how slow they were to shift the ball, and how often it was just blocked before it got out of their foot.
Yeah. Look, Dean had the biggest chance from a John McGinn cross from a worked corner. Austin McPhee not getting the credit he deserved. Ball comes in. Look, Dean flicks it on. It's almost like a Buendia header, except he's not 8 foot in the air heading it, but flicks it over his head. He's actually pretty close to the far post.
Yeah, we had to wait 45 minutes for the first shot, but my God, was it worth the wait. I mean, he actually dummies it with his head, Conan, and then spanks it with his shoulder up over the crossbar. It was the equivalent of the Watkins lollipop and spank.
Leon Bailey had one blocked over. It was a great bit of play from Pau Torres. He's coming into the box and just playing Bailey through. He's just offside anyway, so it doesn't count. But then John McGinn played one to Zaniolo, and it's like he didn't seem to want to score. This is the stage where I was talking about McGinn was doing it all himself, and he won the ball and he charged back up the right flank and he comes inside, plays it to Zaniolo, who's just sort of looking at it, you need to go for it. I know the ball's not played perfectly onto your feet, exactly what you said. He wanted everything just easily into his feet, but you're in a 6-yard box. At some stage, you have to go towards the ball and attack it.
Yeah, John McGinn does brilliantly to get in behind. And Zaniolo's right. McGinn, having done all that hard work, should just pick out Zaniolo a bit more clinically, I think. Zaniolo makes sure everyone in the stadium knows that. Of course he does. That's what he does. He doesn't get the world doesn't go perfectly for him. Then he starts complaining, starts kicking out. And then this all leads to, of course, John McGinn getting sent off. But that's largely because Zaniolo was standing there waving his hands, complaining, while Vicario is running around trying to bend his back to pick up the ball in the box. Yeah. Zaniolo needs to be putting him under pressure there. Watkins is in and around the vicinity as well. Get involved. Put your fucking body around. Do something. Make yourself useful. You're not making yourself useful when the ball's at your fucking feet.
And the only other nomination was Zaniolo as well. Corner flicked on, Zaniolo at the back post. I am shocked that Vicario came out on that. He did well. He did well. He blocked it. He showed bravery. I was dumbfounded that he did that.
Yeah, especially whenever you see him coming out to try and claim that. It was a little bit header into the box and he comes out. And it's like he's trying to do a C. Like he's a fucking cheerleader, put his body into the position of a C. His hands and his legs are right in front of him. It was so, so strange. Such a coward. And you're right to be shocked that he came out on top of that. And top of Zaniolo as well. Because we all know how well he can spank a volley, Conor. I mean, Zaniolo couldn't have connected any worse with that. It was shite from him.
Is there anything in the fact that I don't have any Spurs nominations here? I know he had one or two sights then, especially when shit hit the fan. But there is an element that you nearly be worried about this, but I'd say Emery will look at this and be like, well, you know, if Konza didn't balls that up, if Konza didn't balls it up, if we had a defender, the first goal better, if we had two players in the box on James Maddison, this would be fine. He's probably going to write off the last two goals, which I don't think we should do. But is there anything in the fact that, and I know it's not how you wanted to play at home, but at that stage, for the first 70 minutes, they got two shots, really. We completely gifted them one, and they scored both of them. We didn't do anything, which isn't great. But yeah, maybe he was thinking, keep this tight and we'll try and nick it.
Yeah, like, I couldn't give a fuck if Spurs only had two shots, Conor. We only had one, you know, before those goals went in. We didn't have the ball. Spurs had 70% possession at Villa Park. I mean, our only chance was Dean missing the fucking ball off his head. You know, there's nothing in Spurs not creating chances. Spurs didn't get that many chances because we played like cowards. We were trying to draw the game nil all and hope that Van de Ven got it injured, I suppose, because knocking the ball over the top to Ollie Watkins wasn't going to work with him on the pitch.
All right, I'll take your point. Let's do the Vyman meter. Do you know what the real shame is? The only person I had going up very briefly was Douglas Luiz, but he can't go up. And it was just because, we might as well talk about it now, that, you know, it's just give him his praise where it's due. He's really good in the air. He wins a lot of aerial duels. He gets up and wins a lot of headers. He did it on Thursday night against Henderson. And he got up today at one stage early on and won it with his chest. He got up above everybody and flicked it down with his chest on the Villa player. That's when things were a bit better.
Yeah, it was a lovely chest pass from Douglas Luiz. Something I've been crying out for the last. I know.
I thought about you. I thought Liam would be delighted about that.
But like, you know, you're saying he got up. Like, you're using two examples there. He got up in front of everybody to win two balls. Won them, nobody challenged him. That's why he was able to pass the ball off his chest. And the other one was, like you said, against Jordan Henderson. He must be amazing in the air.
Are you going down? Moussa Diaby, he's just playing the ball into no one over and over and over. We already talked about that, but I'm trying to think of a new way to discuss this Diaby thing, but I was listening to it's not even called The Overlap anymore. It's Stick to Football by The Overlap by Sky Bet by Gary Neville. And they did a fan debate thing, and how much people, it just shows, like, obviously not everybody's watching Villa matches every week, but how much other fans will just throw Diaby, you know, into conversation when they're trying to praise Villa. They're a really good team. Diaby, he's a serious player. And they see the 50 million, they saw the highlights from Bundesliga. Maybe they saw the first few games where he was actually really good. Maybe they saw the titles of our podcast and we're comparing him to Messi. And I don't know where you're getting this from, but Diaby's really good. But yeah, like, it's mad, you know, when you're watching it and like, you know, we're at the stage where you see Diaby, Zaniolo and Moreno coming on. I'm just like, fuck's sake. Is this going to change anything, really? And then, like, the Moreno and Lucas Digne, I'm hot. Like, that's not fair to throw that in. Lucas Digne literally just won us our last Premier League match by coming in off the bench. But, you know, it's just, like, the Diaby and Zaniolo thing is just a bit uninspired, isn't it? We need to shake something up, but it's not playing five at the back anyway. We need to try something.
Sounds like we were trying to say, Conor, we need to get five or six other players back from injury. Yeah. Well, so we don't have to bring on fucking Zaniolo and Diaby every
game. We need to drag Jacob Ramsey out of the fucking room. We need to put Diaby over on the left now. Let's try that. Let's try something to get this boy going.
I think you're right. I think we do need to try something completely different with Diaby if we are going to persist in playing him for the end of the year. I've never seen anybody needs a summer break more than Moussa Diaby. I mean, he's completely fallen off a cliff. He doesn't know what he's doing out there. I know he played that cross into Lucas Digne in that last game, which was glorious, but he was shite whenever he came on that game as well. Let's not forget that. Every cross he played was blocked down. Today, every cross he played was just played into the fucking goalkeeper across the Spurs box and nobody near it. Nobody in the box a couple of times when he crossed the ball in today. So strange.
Yeah. Kanza's going down, right? It's just...
Do you know what the frustrating thing for Cons is? He looks so fucking good in the first half. I actually thought he was the only player who was playing well in the first half. He just looked so majestic a number of times where he just won the ball so easily, turned on the ball, you know, the outside of his foot. Yeah. That thing that Diego Carlos was trying to do, I assume, whenever he played the ball to Kulusevski. you're not him, Diego. But Cons was so good until he wasn't.
Tielemans is going down, right? Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Tielemans looked out of shape today. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, you can't be saying that about a Premier League footballer.
Yeah, I was going to say if the Yoko Max is going down. And then, like, well, the only person I have suggesting to go up is Ollie Watkins, maybe. Is that a bit too kind?
Yeah, Ollie Watkins wasn't good when he was on the ball. I know he was isolated a lot today, so it's hard to be it's hard to be too critical of him, but he wasn't that good on the ball. I wouldn't put him up or down. The only people that are going up is the Villa Park crowd for the glorious chance of Madison's a wanker. that was actually the highlight of today. That was the only thing that we got right at Villa Park today.
Better times, eh? John McGinn's going down, definitely. Like, that's just the position he's put us in now for just the desire to kick somebody. It was just disappointing. Morgan Rodgers has to go down. Not coming in after. We're seeing Diego Carlos coming on late in the match when we're getting hammered, and Morgan Rodgers can't get back. I assume John Duran's still coming back from injury, but he was on the bench, didn't get any game time. But Rodgers was our January reinforcement. And he's just not coming on when we need him in the biggest game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he was a lot more affected by that game in Ajax than Unai Emery was that I was suggesting there earlier. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, would Morgan Rodgers have made a difference today, Connor?
No, I don't think so. I just want to kick out to a lot of people.
All right, John.
Yeah. Going down, Kessler Hayden, not coming on off the bench when we need him. No, take that back. It's a long road ahead. It's 10 games to go. It's still a long whole season. There probably will be another twist or turn. We probably will be coming on here bouncing one of these weeks when we do get a shock win. We do get a couple of good wins. You know, if we beat West Ham and Wolves, we'll be feeling pretty cocky again. We have seen Spurs drop a lot of points recently. Like, it was in their hands only a few weeks ago. They have dropped points. They've shown they can do that. They've got some nice fixtures coming up, though, is the only thing. Until they run into their real brick wall, but I don't know. Can you give me any shits of positivity before we move on?
I mean, Spurs have a really good run of fixtures coming up. We've got West Ham, Man City, and Arsenal away in our next five, and Wolves, like I said, anywhere on the planet.
Great. All right, we'll leave it at that. Go back and listen to the last week's podcast or Thursday. Say the words, football is grim. We're playing again on Thursday against Ajax. Big game, actually, because we didn't get the job done out there. Not sure recording-wise what we'll be doing this week. Even on Sunday's game, I think I'm away on Sunday. So it might be a delayed record on that. It's also St. Patrick's Day, so bear with us. And, yeah, anyway, look, let's all stick together if we can. Share the podcast on if you want to. Share it on privately. I get that you don't really want to tweet anything positive about Aston Villa right now. Maybe just send it on WhatsApp to somebody who doesn't listen to the Villa podcast. Maybe just say, listen to this, it might help you. I don't know if it will help you. I wouldn't listen to this.
Thank God you said that after an hour.
So fair play to you if you did make it this far. I won't be cutting this up anyway and putting it out on social media. I wouldn't listen to this. Come join the Villa podcast every game day. Anyway, it's been great having you. It's been a good season. That's the really disappointing thing. So I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to try to find some words to dress this up. I should really just end it. All the best.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.